Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Well, good morning, Mo.
Morning.
I actually don't have a cup of Joe this morning, which is a huge problem for me. I got to go find some. I'm outside the clinic, you know, getting ready to go through a list. So I hope you have some.
I do.
We have to show that to our guest.
Branded cup here that I'm sure Ned is just salivating on. He wants to see this.
It's coming. my assistant was just making coffee, so I'm going to be getting one right now.
Oh, good. I'm
jealous. Thanks for sending me the cup.
Oh, you got it already. Okay, yeah. So just keep a close eye on it because people are going to try to steal that thing.
Ah, look at that. Look at the thing of beauty.
Good. That's great. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce our guest this morning, Dr. Ned Amendola from Duke. And if I have the heritage right, Western Ontario, London. Where he was around the likes of Pete Fowler and Rich Hawkins and Cease Rarbach and Bob Bourne, a great orthopedic faculty in Canada, and then moved to Iowa and a renowned foot and ankle and sports medicine physician. And then in the past, I want to say seven, eight, maybe even as long as far as 10 years ago, moved to Duke, where he now is practicing. And we were just discussing before getting online in the presidential line for the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. And it's great, Ned, that you would take the time to chat with us on Ortho Joe. And we really, given all of that news around Achilles tendon rupture in professional athletes, we really want to discuss your knowledge. And I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Mo, for the first question.
Sure. So, I mean, I'm sure it's you've been getting inundated with questions, Ned, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers' debut, big deal, debuts with the Jets within 5 minutes of play on turf. And I guess he's age 39, suffers what initially was thought to be some sort of calf injury and then, you know, confirmed as Achilles tendon rupture. Go back now, back in the days in 2019, Kevin Durant, you know, they're in the fifth game against Toronto. Balls has another injury. And again, they thought it was a calf pull and turns out, in fact, subsequent to that, he also has an Achilles tendon rupture, goes through 18 months of rehab and then gets back. And there's been all kinds of questions that have come around. When you think about the current state of the science or broadly the state of the art with Achilles tendon rupture, have we found an answer or is it still very individual specific?
Well, that's the key question, obviously, Mo, that you're asking. First of all, thanks for inviting me on this podcast. And again, I appreciate what both of you done in terms of presenting the evidence and discussing the evidence in all of orthopedics. And I think Achilles is one of those areas that the current practice, at least in my humble opinion, does not really reflect what the evidence shows in terms of treating Achilles tears. And that's been the case, you know, for quite a while. And that's what stimulated us we did a study when I was at Western Ontario. We started in Western Ontario. It took a long time to complete a randomized trial of operative versus non-operative treatment. And since then, there's been, quite a few papers looking at operative versus non-operative treatment. I think there are a number of issues, and I think the individual questions are things that kind of drive the practice of what is done with an Achilles tear. So when you get somebody like Aaron Rodgers tearing their Achilles or Kevin Durant, I think it is an individual with a number of factors around the individual that are determining, you know, what should be done, what can be done, what are the options, and what should we be doing. And I think when you look at Achilles, we don't have the answer. I think no matter what the treatment is, and again, in my opinion, and knowing the literature as well, I don't think it really matters the treatment method Achilles tears is a significant injury, and it's going to take quite a bit of time to get back to normal. So with non-operative treatment, minimally invasive treatment, or open surgical treatment, I think it's a tough injury to recuperate quickly. And I think it takes time for that big tendon to remodel the calf muscle to get back to normal strength after the tendon remodels. And I think that's the main problem, to get the tendon to be functioning normally so that you can strengthen the calf to get back to normal strength. I just think it just takes a long time to do that.
You know, it's interesting, and thank you for that. You know, we had surveyed in Ortho Evidence, we had surveyed folks, and we'd asked them, you know, in an athlete for an Achilles tendon rupture. Now, it's very broad. We didn't give a lot of detail. There was like 85% said we'd operate. When we said it was a non-athlete or someone sedentary, you know, 85% would treat this individual non-operatively. So it did seem to be a lot around this idea of getting people back quickly. And, you know, I remember very clearly, I remember that paper very clearly by Kevin Willits yourself. And, you know, and that when that came out, it was like, okay, great. You know, there's some evidence that suggests that maybe it doesn't matter what we do. The British Medical Journal used that paper in a larger meta-analysis. This would have been around 2019 as well, Ned, and I'm sure you're aware of it. But let me just remind some of our audience members or who are listening in, some of the surgeons and trainees and those listening in. There's really a trade-off, it seems, right? You know, the trade-off between operative and non-operative. Operative reduces the risk of having a re-rupture, and it looks like across trials, regardless of how it's looked at, the estimates at least suggest it's about 57%. But here's the caveat. The absolute difference is actually pretty small. So it's like, you know, 2.9% versus 1% difference. So, you know, the absolute difference is a very small difference. The opposite is surgery is not a benign. I mean, it has complications. And so the risk of surgery and complication rates are about 2.7-fold higher than with non-operative. And again, that risk difference is about double that. So it's about 3% absolute difference between the two different groups. So there really is this interesting trade-off. But I guess you're right. I mean, it really just depends how you look at that information. What we've heard, at least from the NFL, spokespeople, has been turf is a big problem, and maybe getting back to grass and turf itself is leading to a lot of these injuries. What's your, impression on the mechanisms, or I guess on safety of whether it's a soccer player or a footballer? Do you have a sense of what's happening in that, or what some of the aggravating factors are?
Well, turf has always been a question in professional sports and football, soccer, and then even, the courts in basketball. So in terms of the shoe-turf interface and the traction that's generated has always been a question. So if you look at the old turf fields, that was really not simulating grass at all. And there was a lot of papers published in the early 2000s, late 90s on the difference between turf and grass. And the injuries were different at that time just because of the turf was really poor quality. So there was a lot of other things. Then when they started simulating grass with the new turf, the problem with the new turf is that it can really increase the traction between the shoe and the turf. There was a period of time where the shoes were a problem. You know, they had kind of the shark shoes. So they had very sharp, studs on the shoes. So you're really, even on grass, getting really good traction. And those shoes were outlawed because there was a high incidence of ACL tears and a high incidence of injury because of the traction. I think the same question is coming up now. So if you're a quarterback and you're getting tackled by a 300-pound lineman, and you're trying to get yourself out of it, and your shoe is not slipping, and the shoe is got good traction on the turf, you're going to generate that eccentric contraction no matter what, which then causes the Achilles rupture. And so I think there was an injury yesterday, and one of the Buffalo Bills players, the same thing was happening. He was a cornerback, and he's turning around and trying to speed up right away, and his foot is fixed on the ground, like it doesn't slip or move. And so he can generate force, and the amount of force he can generate just is too much for the gastrocnemius, and you get the Achilles tendon chair. So I think there is something to the turf question, you know, about it. Yeah. And they need to figure out the turf interface, the traction interface, to make sure that it's not 100%, then, and it should be maybe at 60% or 75% good traction.
That's interesting, Ned. But the modification in the turf design and manufacture has solved the ACL problem, has it not? That it's roughly equivalent with the new turf and the grass? Is that not the case?
I'm not sure it solved the ACL problem, but from my knowledge, I don't think there's been an improvement per se. Again, the ACL is a little bit slightly different mechanism than the Achilles tears, but I think that there is some concern about it. I think the same thing happened with basketball courts and the traction on the courts. And, you know, and they went away from having the rubberized courts back to wood courts so that you get some slippage of the shoe. Yeah. And the same thing with basketball shoes, you know, trying to figure out the sole of the shoe and the traction on the court.
Yeah, makes sense. Absolutely.
So Ned, if you know, from your own work and your own belief that, you know, practice doesn't necessarily always reflect evidence, and evidence suggests there may not be a big difference between operative or non-operative treatment, do you think the solution or the future really is in how we rehab these patients and how we help them along? There is a study, and I'll quote it. And again, this is very high level, but it was in British Journal of Sports Medicine 2013, looking at 1,743 or so soccer players. And one of the predictors of re-rupture and re-injury was a shorter recovery period. So, you know, you can imagine in Durant's case, they said 18 months and he came back and pretty well performed, like almost he hadn't left. And there is always this risk of, you know, with a football player having generally, as I understand, a fairly short career anyway, 3 years or so. You know, for them to be out for 18 months is almost half of their actual active career, it seems, you know, if we're looking at it cynically somewhat. Is there pressure to get, you know, these high performance athletes back quicker? And is that in itself a risk?
Well, I think so. But again, these professional athletes go to every end to optimize their treatment of their injuries and prolong their careers. I mean, these athletes go all over the world to kind of find the magic cure, you know, for early, you know, joint degeneration or, you know, anything to improve their body function. So I think athletes are just driven to try and do the best they can and get back as quickly as possible. So if you look at Aaron Rodgers, I mean, that was announced after the surgery from Aaron Rodgers that he was going to be back, you know, maybe be back before the end of the season, which I think is going to be a very difficult goal to achieve. Number one. And number two, I think if you get back too early and your body and the musculotendinous unit is not functioning at 100%, then I think you are putting yourself at risk of a recurrent injury just because you're not, you know, 100% rehabilitated. I think Kevin Durant at 18 months, I actually saw him practicing at 1 year after the injury and he looked pretty good to me. We happened to be in New York for a game. And he was looking really, really functioning well and running up and down the court at 1 year. But, you know, it took an extra 6 months. And now you see that in ACL injury as well, you know, where you look at an extra month of rehab after 9 months. So if you look at 6 months, 9 months, and then you look at 12 months, the recurrent injury rate at 12 months is less. And that's because your whole neuromuscular control and overall function around that musculotendinous unit, I think, is much better. So I think it's the same for the Achilles. I think the, you know, you can get back earlier, but it's not going to be 100%. Now, the second thing is, as you know, orthopedics is technically driven, trying to improve techniques and what we do. So there's always these new additions. Like there was a paper published from a professional soccer club in Europe, where they were doing immediate FHL transfers to augment the Achilles repair, like for acute Achilles repairs, doing an immediate flexor hallucis longus transfer, and to get the people back to playing soccer professionally. Then, you know, here in the U.S., you know, over the last few years has been a lot of, you know, technical case discussions about augmenting ligament repairs with some synthetic augmentation. And so all these things come into play where people say, well, if we add this extra technical advance, it might get people back to play sooner. And that may be the case. I mean, we're pushing the envelope all the time, and I'm not being a naysayer, but I think in our specialty, you know, that's what happens. People are driving the specialty forward by doing something innovative, and sometimes it falls backwards and sometimes it goes forwards.
Ned, I have to ask you, is it possible to get a return to normal gastrosoleus strength with non-surgical care? Is that possible?
I think it's possible, yes. And I think the evidence has been supportive of that. Again, it depends on the treatment of the acute tear. So I think if you get to the tear acutely within the first couple of weeks, and you do the appropriate treatment with keeping the tendon opposed, having some stimulation with weight bearing early so that you get some stimulation of tendon growth and tendon healing, I think that you can get back to normal. I think if you start the treatment late, so if you start at 3 or 4 weeks where you've started to get some consolidation of the hematoma and the tendon and the lengthened position, I think it's going to be very difficult.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there are many members of the listening audience who want to have that little bit of insight from you as they're advising patients. Mo, I'm going to let you have the last question, and I've got one for both of you at the very end. I'm not going to show my hand yet, but go ahead. You can ask Ned the last question.
Well, so Ned, I mean, as a surgeon and scientist, I'm sure you think a lot about, you know, just what's needed and what's been done. Do you think there's anything left in terms of the evidence as it relates to operative versus non-operative? I'm sure there's lots to be done, but if you were to be thinking of an important study that has to be done that hasn't been done, what might that look like? Would it be a repeat in just larger numbers, or would it be something uniquely different?
I think what's missing is a study on these high-level athletes, you know, and that's the problem that we get into. So I get that asked all the time. Now, do you operate on your Duke athletes to get an Achilles tear, or do you treat them non-operatively? And so when you're looking at a high-level athlete going back to the highest level of basketball or the highest level of football or the highest level of soccer, do we have that information? So people quote a lot of things. You know, they quote even on our study by Willits. When we looked at the strength testing and you know testing the strength at high speed versus low speed, there seemed to be a better outcome in the operatively treated patients versus the non-operatively treated patients. Secondly, you know, when you do surgery, you're basically retensioning the Achilles, and as Mark has alluded to, you know, if you're not retensioning it back to normal with non-operative treatment, will it ever get back to normal? So there's just a feeling that if it, in the high elite athlete, if you're missing 5 or 10% of the normal tension, they're not going to get back to normal function. So you need to restore that normal tension. So again, to answer your question, I think it's virtually impossible, but to have a study where you're comparing non-operative treatment to operative treatment in the very high level athlete, I don't think we have that information. There was one study done in rugby players in New Zealand where they compared operative versus non-operative treatment by Twaddle, and they showed very similar results in operative versus non-operative treatment in rugby players. So I'm not sure, again, that relates to North America, but it's very difficult to get American surgeons to believe that you can take an NBA player and treat them non-operatively.
That's very insightful, Ned. And now my question for both of you. I know, and it's obvious from this conversation, that you follow the NFL. But as Canadians, what's going on in the CFL? What can you share? Who are the strong teams? What do you got, Mo? You got anything?
I'm the wrong person. You have to understand that. You know, for me to even remember Aaron Rodgers stats was big. And all I know is something that's a big deal. All I know is Taylor Swift showed up to one of these footballers' games, and that's been bigger than anything else that's happened in the NFL in the last year. It's all you hear about is Taylor Swift is dating some footballer. That's the extent of my football knowledge, guys.
Okay, Ned, can you answer the question? What's going on in the CFL? Who are the strong teams?
Well, the Argos, obviously, in Mo's area, the Tiger Cats and the Argos. The Tiger Cats are not doing very well, but the Argos are doing very well this year. They're at the top of the league. I still have a lot of friends. I started in Canada. I played college football in Canada. I got drafted in the CFL, but I decided to go into medicine instead. So I kind of still keep track a little bit. Why do you have such an interest, Mark, in the CFL?
Well, I just had a couple of Canadians. I kind of had a hunch that you
would, yeah, the wrong.
I kind of had a hunch that one of you would get an A on the answer, and that's you, Ned. And I kind of had a hunch that Mo Knight might not even pass. And I was right on both.
You're accurate.
Well, that's great.
Throw stats around. I can throw stats like anyone, though. But it just, you have to. As soon as you get to the question, which is what's happening in your own country, you see, I fall apart.
Oh, that's great. Well, Ned, thanks so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to chat with us about the current knowledge in Achilles tendon rupture, and we greatly appreciate it. And we want to wish you all the best as your the pressure on your time with your leadership in the American Academy is going to increase, and we know you're going to continue to lead and lead the specialty with great integrity and great energy. And we wish you all the best, and enjoy that Ortho Joe mug. Just make sure you lock it up at night, because there will be thieves coming after it.
Well, I just want to thank both of you, and again, congratulate both of you for everything you do to keep our profession at the highest level. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Yeah, it's a great day. Thanks again for the chat.
Bye.